Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Welcome back into another edition of College Golf Talk. Burko and Brentley with you. We're recording late on a Wednesday evening. Sort of our staple, Brentley. You know, let's get the kids to bed. Let's get the kitchen cleaned after dinner and look at the laundry on the bed that needs to be folded and put away before we go to sleep. But it's sort of like the countdown to Christmas. Postseason, weeks away. The Augusta National Women's Amateur, days away, right around the corner. This is the two-month stretch that if you like college and amateur golf, you sit back and you revel in it.
What's on your wish list? What's on your – what are you writing to college golf Santa?
That's a good question. Anything that creates the drama of year one of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Now, there has been drama every year, a playoff in year two, a teenager coming from behind a year ago. But year one, the standard was set, in my opinion, with the two best college players in Kupcho and Fosse, the memories of that second nine, what Jennifer was able to do, the sportsmanship, the camaraderie. And oh, by the way, those were the two young women, the only two that deferred their professional status. Remember that year when 5, 6, 7, 8 had the chance to turn pro, and those are the only two that came back to school. So
it's,
I want something
it's almost
like that.
Like it's almost like they were rewarded for an unselfish decision.
I like
almost
that.
Almost like karma. And Burko, I had a rookie move. Just made a rookie move. I popped open a little bottle, one of those mini bottles, a Coke Zero, thinking that zero calories, zero sugar, zero caffeine. There's definitely caffeine in this, and it's 8:41, so I could be up a little bit.
Nah, nothing wrong with a little caffeine. It'll just soothe you into your evening.
Okay.
8.5 hours. Right. Well, when you get to my age, you just put your head on the pillow. It doesn't matter what happens. I digress. Let's jump into it. Men's results. We'll start with the longer Invitational. I'm surprised. Alabama, a winner by 8 shots over Georgia Tech. Vandy finishes third. The Commodores were right there. A March statement made by head coach Jay Sewell and his team, Nick Dunlap, stands up, shows up big. An intriguing team now to watch that, I'll be honest, I wasn't fully considering come conference championships, but maybe they're coming together at the right time.
Yeah, you know, I think I should have, instead of a Coke Zero, I should have had a milkshake, because that's exactly how the Crimson Tide celebrate every victory. And I'm kind of with you. I didn't expect this type of performance. I didn't expect them to be at Chick-fil-A last night with the victory and milkshakes, because they were going up against a pretty stout field at the top with Vanderbilt and Georgia Tech and Georgia, Virginia, Arkansas. But they're starting, you know, to peak at the right time. And Thomas Ponder, Cannon Claycomb, those are the experienced players. And you got Nick Dunlap, Jonathan Grizz, the freshman, actually didn't have his – he shot 87 in the final round. But growing pains, right? But I think this was Nick Dunlap's coming out moment. And he's kind of bided his time a little bit. He's watched his buddies, fellow freshman Caleb Surratt and Ben James – win tournaments, and it was only a matter of time, I think, before the U.S. Junior Champion a couple years ago ended up getting it done. And I go back to And I know that a couple of the players have reminded me of this, but I go back to the preseason rankings and I'm trying to look them up right now, but I believe I had them ranked outside the top 20. I actually got it right here, but I had them ranked 22nd, and I basically challenged them and I said, while the Tide may be a year away, there's no reason that impact freshman Nick Dunlap, Jonathan Gris can't expedite things. Of course, how much head coach J.C. Will gets out of this bunch will be heavily dictated by the three juniors, J.P. Cave, Kenny Claycomb, Thomas Ponder, who can't afford another season of a combined five top tens. Well, they're way over that mark now. And this is a team that could win an SEC championship if they get into match play. A good little mix of experience and youth, and maybe a team that could sneak into match play too. At the NCAA.
Vandy, I thought, was positioned perfectly, couple back, final round. Didn't play well for their standards. I thought that could have been a huge exclamation point in March to say, all right, we are the team to beat. Finished third. Gordon Sargent tied for fourth. The guy is there every single week. Ben James struggled, tied for 40th. Matthew Riedel tied 62nd for Vanderbilt. So, you know, as we get closer to the Haskins, and again, a lot still to be determined, in my opinion, Gordon Sargent has done nothing to see anyone jump him or even get closer to him, in my opinion.
He sees what Rose Zhang is doing on the women's side, and I think he wants to be that type of player. And frankly, he's pretty close to that. I think he's got quite the cushion right now, although we'll talk about a couple or, you know, certain player later in this next event that we'll talk about that has a case if he can start winning tournaments. But I think this is what Vanderbilt needed. And I forget who I was talking to, and it might not even been a golf team. It might have been something else. It might have been about pro sports or whatever. And it was basically you kind of want to maybe get punched in the mouth right before it really counts. Like, and this may be Vanderbilt's time. I mean, last year they had such a great spring and they were rolling and rolling and rolling, and then the adversity hit in the semifinals and they lose. Not that, I mean, they got outplayed, and not that they played poorly. But I think this will be good for them. I think this shows them that they aren't unbeatable. And I think William Mall coming out, getting that confidence, playing as an Indy, getting a T2, maybe that gets him into the lineup, and he has a kind of resurgence like he did last spring. But I think this is exactly what Vanderbilt needed, and I think they're kind of disappointed, but 24 hours now removed from that, I bet you they're back home and they're working hard and they're probably thinking, you know, this ain't that bad, but we don't want to be feeling like this in a couple months.
Correct. Take your lumps in March, savor the victory in May if you can get it. Clemson finished fourth, Georgia fifth. More importantly, both those teams over 500 now, so in position to earn a regional bid. Out west, Tucson, the NIT, great field. Arizona getting the job done. They win by one over Pepperdine, that I believe shot 18 under that final day, the Waves, to make a charge. Arizona State third, Illinois, Oklahoma State tied for fourth. USC led through 2 days, couldn't get the job done, but Jackson Rivera, a good bright spot for the Trojans. But, you know, we had Mike Small on from Illinois. They were in the mix. We've talked about it seemingly every week. Pepperdine is going nowhere. You know, when you can get William Mao leading the way, Hitchner, Sam Choi stepped up, they're an intriguing thing. And I thought Oklahoma State, that was the squad for me, that if they had a bad week, they were in big trouble in terms of the 500 rule.
Yeah, and I believe that would have been the first time, or it could have been the first time in school history this year if they didn't finish under 500. But and they're still under 500. I mean, they're still two under, but you have to, you know, kind of figure out, you know, figure they're not going to, you know, finish poorly at the Big 12s and whatever other tournaments. I think they're playing the Haskins tournament next week in Augusta, maybe the Valspar as well. But they'll be fine. They're a top 20 team. But You know, it's one of those things. I looked at this leaderboard. I guess it would have been Tuesday, kind of late afternoon, and there were like six teams that were all within three or four shots. And I think that's what you want, is that close competition, and especially a team like Arizona State that's kind of young, a team like Pepperdine that has some youth at the back end. Arizona, just I know it's, you know, on a golf course or it's their home event, but you know, just getting that feeling for being in the pressure pack situation and having things matter. And I know it's just the regular season, and you know, there's some bigger events coming up, but it was exciting. I mean, there was really could have went either, you know, either way or any which way. But I thought it would have been crazy though, Berko, if USC ended up pulling out the team victory. They're way under 500. I think they're like 24 wins, and so they're probably not going to satisfy the 500 rule. I think they're mathematically eliminated now, but that would have been crazy because that was, if you would have, I mean, I think there was 13 teams in the field outside of maybe Wyoming. If you would have said, all right, pick, you know, any team in this field, I think they would have been the 12th team I would have thrown out there to win. So, but still, I mean, sixth place finish, I think maybe that gives them just a little bit of juice to kind of close out it, you know, if, you know, strong, and then see what they can do next year.
We touched on William Mao. You alluded to it earlier. Someone that keeps knocking on the door if, say, Sargent lets up in terms of a Haskins Award a couple months from now. William Mao is playing like he did as a freshman. Maybe he hasn't seen it through to the end in terms of victories, but every week he's right there, first page of the leaderboard, racking up top tens like no one's business. And it's good to see him sort of come full circle after some indifferent sophomore and junior seasons.
Yeah, and I think this is now four top three finishes for William Mao, and it's worth noting a couple of weeks ago when we came out with the Haskins watch list, and there's 15 players on it. He was not one of those 15 guys, but that doesn't mean that he can't be on the next one. That doesn't mean that he can't win the award. And now he's up to sixth in golf stat, and he's the guy I said if he can just get a couple wins, I think he'd probably be the favorite to win their conference championship. But if he can get a regional win and then do something at the NCAAs, he's one of those guys that has built the kind of back end of his resume to maybe be able to charge it, you know, challenge Gordon Sargent if Gordon slips up these last couple of months. So, yeah, again, it's good to see because I think there was a moment there the last couple seasons where like, you know, does William Mao really have what it takes to be a first team All-American again? And you know, is he really one of the best prospects in college golf? And I think he's answered that big time this season.
You talked about William Mall from Vanderbilt, not to be confused with William Mao from Pepperdine.
Have never seen them in the same place, so jury's still out.
Exactly.
Could be the same
William
person.
Mall played well as an individual. So too did Stephen Campbell Jr. from Oklahoma. So maybe like Scott Limbaugh, Vandy head coach, Ryan Hibble, Oklahoma's leader. Okay, is Campbell in? Is he out? You know, one name that just has not panned out is Luke Kluver. I thought he
Yeah.
might be the next Brightwell or Goddard. The transfer from Kansas just doesn't make the starting five or even go out as an Indy. So,
Well, you clearly didn't read the preseason rankings where I said that don't expect Luke Kluver to be one of those guys. I think fine player, but I think all indication was that he was going to have his work cut out for him to be a consistent guy in this very deep team. But you mentioned individuals, Berko. I put your coaching hat on for a second, and what do you think the dynamic is right now on this roster? You know, when you have all of these really good players, no one's really stood out, no one's separated themselves. What do you do if you're Ryan Hibble? I mean, do you open it up in qualifying these last couple of events, or do you basically say, all right, like I'm gonna go with this next five, and that's going to be it. Like, does Stephen Campbell now with this performance, is he in the lineup now for the rest of the way?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, Hibble, knowing him as long as we have, he's going to make people earn it. But I could also go back to, was it the quarterfinals last year. Memory serves Pepperdine, Oklahoma, Campbell getting up and down from the back bunker to win 18, then hits it inside of, I think he was playing Minetti on that first extra hole up the hill at 10. And I thought, oh my gosh, he's going to win and Oklahoma's going to pull it out. So Stephen's shown in big spots that, okay, you know, I can do it. But there are obviously two, three, four other guys that believe they can as well. The good thing, if you're Hibble or any other coach, you don't need to know now, but you need to know soon. And I think the quicker you can shore up a lineup, I'm not a coach, don't claim to be. They're much better and smarter than I am. I'm not looking to try to qualify for my 4 and 5 spots in April. I want to know who they are.
I agree. And also, Stephen Campbell, really good desert golf, target golf player. Doesn't really do a lot of his damage with the driver. Not a huge length guy. So I think, you know, he's perfect for Greyhawk. Not saying Greyhawk is not a very long golf course. It's just a golf course where guys don't hit a lot of drivers. So, yeah, that's probably something that Hibble's looking at. I think we'll see Stephen Campbell at Greyhawk if they get there in a few weeks.
Yeah, other events, All-American, Ole Miss, 4-shot win over Tennessee and Louisville, and the Schenkel, Georgia Southern, getting the job done at home. They've had a very good year. Had someone in the know said they remind them of Liberty from a few seasons ago, where you thought, wow, look at these Liberty Flames, the top 25 team. Ben Carr picks up the W, 11-shot win over Mississippi State. Notre Dame struggled, tied for 7th. Keep an eye on Georgia Southern as that team. If things fall well for them, maybe they're in the mix of that Monday last day of stroke play at Greyhawk. Again, a lot has to happen, but if you dig deeply, that resume is there for them.
Yeah, well coached team, huge chip on their shoulder. It's good to see Ben Carr playing well, because I mean, he's got a lot, you know, his profile has been amplified this last 6-7 months or so since the USAM. But we'll see him in a week and a half, so be good to catch up with him. And solid team.
500 rule, you talked about USC. They're 24 in the hole. SMU 3 under, Indiana 10 under, NC State 2 back, Arkansas 5 back, Wake 7, Oklahoma State 2. Now those are teams varying from 19th to 69th in the country, but they're sort of perennial fixtures, if not blue bloods in a few of them, that are in trouble. Still golf to play, but you don't want to be getting April saying, I better beat 9 of these 11 teams or we're out.
And we probably should have the college golf guru Lance Springler on for the 500 rule discussion. But I believe the most teams that have ever finished inside the magic number and have not satisfied the 500 rule since it was introduced in 07-08. I believe it was that first season. I think you had maybe four or five teams, but normally it's only, and it might've been even 6, but certainly there's some teams that are sweating it out. And I think we'll see probably 2 or 3 teams. You know, there's teams like NC State and Oklahoma State with only 2 wins to make up. They should be fine. But I got Wake Forest circled, and they don't have a lot of tournaments left. The ACC is very deep. I guess you could say the same for Arkansas, too, with 14 teams in that conference. If both those teams have poor conference tournaments, they're out. And I think you especially have to feel in that scenario for the Razorbacks, who a year ago were very close to making match play at the NCAA championship. This year, they return. They have a ton of seniors: Julian Perico, Segundo Pinto, Mateo Fernandez, De Oliveira, who we'll see at the Masters in a week and a half, too. I would be heartbroken for that team if they were not eligible to play an NCAA regional and at least have a chance to get back to Greyhawk, because I know a lot of those guys, you're not supposed to root for guys, but I would just, you know, I would be absolutely gutted for them. But I know they can do it. I know they can do it. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see Arkansas have a really strong close to this spring and get themselves a chance of getting back to Greyhawk.
A story of the week comes from the Mountain View Collegiate, the ladies, the Cyclones of Iowa State, 60 under par. That is 6-0 NCAA record, beating Stanford's mark of a year ago of 50 under. They win by 23. And I don't care where you're playing, 60 under par is really darn good.
Now, it was also not on Golfstat. It was on Birdiefire, which is, you know, kind of the forgotten live scoring system. And I was joking with a coach who texted me about it. And we're like, if it happened on Birdiefire, did it really happen? It's, you know, kind of like if a tree falls in the forest and no one's around to hear it, did it really fall? But again, not to diminish anything that Iowa State's done, that was a heck of a performance in a really strong field. And so, yeah, it might have been a gettable course. The setup might have been fairly easy. But they beat Ohio State, who finished runner-up, who has a lot of talent on that roster, by 23 shots. San Jose State was in that field. Arkansas was in that field, finished 12th. This is, you know, really cool to see, because we all know what, you know, happened with Iowa State a few years ago in that program. And that's just something that, you know, probably is still really heavy on the hearts of the players who are left, who, you know, were teammates with Thelia. So cool to see. I want to see them keep it going, and see if they can try to sneak in there to that now 30 team NCAA championship field.
Big win for FSU as well at home, taking the
team
and
I like
an individual honors. They've got three players going to the Augusta National Women's Amateur, and you're jumping right in there. You're saying the veterans, the youngsters for head coach Amy Bond, maybe going to make some noise at Greyhawk.
Yeah, no, I had a chance to spend some time with them at the Moon Golf, and they didn't have their best showing there. But I was really impressed by that, the freshman that they have, Lottie Wode, and she won the individual title on Tuesday, or it might have been Sunday, but, you know, this past week. And just a player, has a ton of top eight finishes. I think she's only finished outside the top eight once in her college career so far. Gets her first victory. Just a really, you know, kind of golf junkie. If you will, just as always practicing. Like, it's just golf, 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 golf. And it's a little bit different than maybe a couple other of the players on their team. Amelia Williamson, who we'll, you know, talk about here in a few minutes, is one of my favorite ANWAF storylines. But like, Lottie's just another, you know, great international player that has come through Amy Bond's team. And I just think this team, they've trended, they've gotten a little bit better in terms of barely missing match play, getting into match play. Now they have the taste. I think they're poised to maybe win a match now, or maybe win two. But yeah, a huge fan of this team. And that
speaking...
pains me to say, you know, with, you know, growing up a Florida Gator, just like you, Berko, but I really love what Coach Bond, and she's one of the best. So it's easy to root for that team.
Yeah, they are good, though, or someone certainly to keep an eye on come the postseason. Augusta National Women's Amateur gets going next week, Wednesday and Thursday, first two rounds at Champions Retreat. Then all the players, participants, invites will get the round at Augusta on Friday. And then one of the differences, the top 30 after the two rounds of Champions Retreat, 30 in ties, now make it to the final day at Augusta National Golf Club for Saturday's final round. Also,
I'm kind of sad about that.
I know you like the drama, but you know what? Get a few more in there. Get a few more in there.
I also do not like weather delays too, and that's what, you know, that playoff, you know, is kind of, you know, when you get weather, it's not ideal.
Yeah, and the good thing is, the first couple of days we're gonna do it live from Champions Retreat for a couple hours. So an added bonus.
That's right.
Cara Banks, Paige McKenzie, Morgan Pressel, and I will have some fun watching those young women finish up the drama. You know, maybe you got a birdie 18 to get in, so it's gonna be fun to watch that. So we certainly encourage you to join us. Favorites, there's so many. I look at Rose Zhang and Ingrid Lindblad.
Yeah.
I believe the two best players in college golf, 1-2 in the world amateur golf ranking. For me, they're the favorites. But obviously, there are others, if you want to say sleepers, that also pique your interest, whether it's Rachel Keane or Anna Davis. You're not in this field because they like you. You're in this field because you're really, really good.
Yeah, and I'll throw Amari Avery into that mix too. Just you're looking for players who can overpower golf courses and players who are used to playing on the big stage, and all those players check those boxes. But we talk so much about Augusta National, and I've fallen into that trap too recently, and you know, working on some feature stories and talking to people in the lead up to this year's event. Pretty much the common denominator from all the players are, yeah, Augusta's tough, but they set up the pins and some bowls so that there's birdies to be had. But every single player that I talk to, when you ask them about Augusta, they're like, well, hold on, like Champions Retreat is just as tough, if not more demanding in terms of how they set it up. Like, you have to bring it there before you can even think about getting to Augusta National. And so you look at players like Ingrid Lindblad, who drive the ball so well. Like, we can talk about Rose Zhang forever. She just does everything well. But a player like Ingrid Lindblad and, you know, Amari Avery, who have a lot of power. I think Hannah Darling, someone who you have to put in that group of favorites. And then some sleepers, you know, a player who was just outside the top 10 last year, Caitlin McNabb. A player who you look at and, you know, small frame, but really has a lot of game, from TCU. You know, Jenny Bay from Georgia, very quiet, but has put together a really good year college-wise for the Georgia Bulldogs. I think Megan Scofield could be another sleeper, just with how she played at the Darius Rucker for most of that tournament, and how she's kind of figured out things with her swing, got a little bit off during the winter. So there's a ton, and there's going to be some names who, you know, we aren't in college golf yet, who could pull an Anna Davis, maybe some younger players like a Savannah DeBach from Belgium or a Cayetana Fernandez Garcia Pollo, who is a future A&M Aggie, going to join her sister Blanca there next year. But yeah, I mean, you go down the list, Megha Gane, Cynthia Liu, Julia Johnson, our coworker. It'll be interesting to see, and that's kind of one of the storylines, if how Emilia Miliacho a couple years ago got into that playoff. You know, maybe the not having the pressure of feeling like I have to do this for a career, maybe that spurs Julia to have a good week, although she hasn't played much, so hopefully she's been practicing. But yeah, I mean, I'm interested
but
to see.
But perhaps you don't know the news, or maybe I shouldn't be telling the news. She is turning professional.
Oh, well, see, I didn't know that. See, this is why we have you on the podcast.
Well, we're a team here. Yep. Julia is excited to play Augusta National Women's Amateur, and then she said, I'm going pro.
Huh.
So how about that?
Well, it's a great springboard.
Exactly. Real quick teaser. You were talking about Amelia Williamson from Florida State. Quick little background on her that makes her someone to root for.
Yeah, so I'm going to be writing the feature here over the next couple of days. Hope to have it done maybe Monday of tournament week. But just it's her first Augusta National Women's Amateur. She's fifth year senior. People may know her. You know, she wears, you know, glasses just like me. You know, kind of the Buddy Holly looking glasses. You know, on the golf course, if it's sunny, she'll have the sunglasses on. So definitely stands out in that sense. But I think the biggest thing is just her background. You know, she's from a really small town in England, and very similar to William Mao, she grew up on a farm. You know, her dad still raises pigs. They do a lot of cropping as well. Her mother works out of the home as a hairdresser. So just, you know, very, very humble means. And you know, the fact that when she arrived at Florida State and her head coach, Amy Bond, said she was, you know, not the type of player that that would really speak up. She kind of just blended in. She struggled with confidence. She was part of that same recruiting class as Beatrice Fahlein and Frieda Shinholt. And she's really, I think she was the fourth player in that recruiting class just in terms of rankings. So just an interesting kind of progression, and how she's slowly gained confidence, and now she's a senior leader and how she almost wasn't going to come back. Amy Bond kind of has a rule where she won't have more than two players from the same country. And they, you know, she also has Charlotte Heath, Lottie Wode as well from England. It's just something that she doesn't really do. But Amelia came to her at the beginning of last spring and knew that there was some scholarship money that opened up from a player leaving and said, you know, I really want to come back. And she had missed out on Anwa last year by just a couple of rankings points. I think Charlotte Heath was the first person left out as well. Now they're both in. And lastly, Amy told me one more cool story. So she had asked all three of her players when they got their invitation this year to wait and bring it into her office the next day and open it on video. Well, Charlotte and Lottie couldn't wait. They opened it. But Amelia, you know, after waiting her entire amateur career to get this invite, she's like, you know, you've done so much for me. I can wait, you know, another 12 hours or so. And she opened it up and tried to hold back tears. And she did a good job. That hasn't always really been the case. She's a really emotional player, but I just enjoyed talking to her. Like, the interview was very enjoyable. She's very thoughtful in terms of her quotes and things like that. Also a big skier growing up. So I think just a player who you may look over just looking through the field list and, you know, maybe rule out. But I think her story is one that's interesting and definitely deserves to be told. And, you know, you'll have to read it, Berko, before you go on the air. And maybe you can share a little bit of it for the television viewers.
I love it. Love it. Can't wait to check that out. Just another reason to dig deep, go a little layer by layer on these talented young individuals at Augusta National Women's Amateur. We only get about 2 or 3 minutes left. I know you wanted a quick fantasy
Let's
draft,
do
if you will. 8 players, start five, count five. How about this? We're going to pick five each.
Okay.
And then you can start your four, and that's what
you
got.
If you lose players, you can add them after the 2 rounds.
All right, fair enough. And it says Berko gets to pick first, correct?
Correct.
Ingrid Lindblad.
Whoa! All right, well, then I got to take Rosé. And I'm writing these down, by the way, for you.
Thank you. Yes,
and
I was back
snake,
and
snake
forth.
Draft, right?
Yep, snake it around.
Well, I'm going to go Amari Avery.
All right, I will take Rachel Keane.
And first pick of the third round to Berko.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Where's that? See, I had it up. I had it up. I had it up. Right, wait. There's. Come on. Come on. There we go. There we go. I had a few. I mean, I want to pick Rose. I should pick Rose, but I just want to do something different. Rachel Keane.
You already picked Rachel Keane.
Oh, did I? No.
Yeah, you just did, right?
I picked Ingrid. Then you
picked
two.
Yeah, I picked Rose and Amari, and then you picked Rachel, and now it's the third pick.
Oh, okay. God, I got to get it together, huh? On the clock.
It's past 9 o'clock now, so it's past both of our bedtimes.
Oh, man. Give me Amelia Migliaccio.
Homer. I'll go her teammate, Carolina Shikara, and then for my next pick, I will go Lottie Wode.
I like it. I like it. So I've got two more. Give me Hannah Darling. I'm going to have some fun. Give me Gianna Clement.
Whoa, the back-to-back 16-year-old winners.
Why not? Why not?
Your
right, final
so that's
pick?
Your five, and then I got a final right. pick. I'm going to go I'm going to go Saki Baba. If she can play half as good as she did at the U.S. Women's Amateur last year, I think she'll have a shot. So that's
I
mine,
like it.
And we'll see who wins. And we'll play college golf, play five, count four for the first
yeah.
2 rounds.
I did not. I put as much time into that as I did my bracket. That Marquette is obviously out.
I have the final four still intact.
My 9-year-old has Alabama winning it all, and then he said he wanted to do one with underdogs, and he has Florida Atlantic winning it all. And he has Princeton alive as well.
No, he doesn't. Oh, my goodness.
I will show it to you. I will show it to you. Because he thinks he's winning the million-dollar bracket, but I had to tell him that there's no perfect brackets remaining. That's going to do it. I know time is short. Always good to catch up. We will see you in Augusta next week. And for everyone tuning in, as always, we appreciate you spending some time with us here on College Golf Talk. We'll do it again soon.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.